Hello and welcome to RTÉ Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast with me, Aoife Cormick. This episode features an interview from our archives with musician and composer Josephine Keegan, and it's from a series called Cherish the Ladies, which was first broadcast in 2005.
It's just a way of life. I can't imagine life without it. That's what it means. It's been a compulsion, I suppose, to preserve what was handed down and to add on to it, play it the best way I can, pass it on to other people. That's it.
I'm honoured once again to have been asked to launch a Josephine Keegan publication. I say again because it seems like only yesterday I was launching her book collection up in Quinns at Camlock. We had a great night there and will again tonight, I think. And now we have two new publications, no less. She's, I think, producing them faster than I can launch them, to tell you the truth. Most people slow down as they get older. I speak from bitter experience. But at 70, Josephine Keegan is accelerating. After a musical life that's involved the learning of music, as Maura said, from her father and mother, and the teaching of music, after being a composer for many years, after being a collector all her life since she was a schoolgirl, after making many commercial recordings as an accompanist, after making no less than 5 solo LPs on which she played fiddle and accompanied herself on piano, and after winning awards throughout her life, ranging, as Maura said, from the Oireachtas Gold Medal of 1955 to the T.G. Cahir Composer of the Year in 2005, 50 years later, she had a new creative burst, a fresh creative burst, in her late second half of her 60s, and she produced the Keegan Tunes, a book of her compositions and a double CD, and now we have these 2 CDs of her playing, featuring fiddle in one case, piano in another, and also featuring many of her own compositions.
Last Saturday night in Skerries, you launched 2 new albums, not 1,
yes,
but 2. Tell me a little about the albums and what was on them.
The piano album, maybe half of it is tunes of Carolyn's. 2 of the slow airs on that are my own compositions. And the others, the lesser spotted tunes, would be some that I got from Cole's collection and various places like that, you know. I always like to fish out new tunes from the corners, you know, and dust them off and play them. And
the recordings, the piano recordings on the piano album, the older ones, tell me about those. I mean, when were they recorded and how did you come to get them back?
Oh, well, I had forgotten completely about them. I was doing a recording in Dublin. It was another trio record with Maguire and Burke, and we had that finished. And then it was thought that maybe I would do some, and I amused myself and did so many tracks on piano and so many on fiddle. That was all done in the spare time, and it was all put together then to go out as an album, half fiddle, half piano. And I forgot about it completely until last year sometime. This blank CD arrived in the post from Joe Burke, and I thought it was worth saving some of it, you know, so that's how that came about.
Well, we won't go into where Joe Burke found them, because that's a complicated...
I have no idea, he hasn't said yet. Well, the music was in the house before I was in it, you know. Music was always there. My father played flute. I was born over in Scotland. My father worked over in Scotland for the post office for years. And he didn't have much opportunity to play with other musicians at that time. So he made it a point of playing himself at home to keep the tunes alive. And then he had the old gramophone, which I still have in there, with all the 78s on it. And we, as children, had our own sort of table-sized gramophone as well, with our lot of things that we could play. And that's where my music came from, really. There was no music on my mother's side, but she had learned to play piano. She taught us all piano, as a matter of fact. When my other two sisters went to piano lessons, the teacher was very pleased with how well they were improving, and he said, "You must be getting great help with this." And my sister said, "Yeah." My mother helps me all the time, and said, "Oh, she must be very good. Oh," she said, "she's a fabulous musician. She's learning to play Home Sweet Home now." My mother kept one
head.
One page ahead. So that's how that was done. And then I got what they knew from them and learned the piano at home, and then went off to school. I went off to boarding school and learned there as well. I started to play on tin whistle, and my father, playing the flute, of course, was the one that showed me how to do that. He wore a waistcoat with six buttons on, and he used to sit me on his foot and make out the notes for me on the buttons. And that's how I learned some of it, and then he'd play along with me. And he wasn't a great fiddle player, but he knew a few tunes, and he got me started. And there was a fiddle in the house. Where it came from, I had no idea. But that's where I started, anyway.
And you mentioned then when you went to secondary school that you did music again in secondary school. Was that classical music or traditional music?
It was classical. I still kept up my traditional music. And in case I'd forget that, my father got me the O'Neill collection. That was in 1947, I think. And then when I'd come home from school on holidays, the first thing I was asked, any new tunes? So I think that sort of idea never left me, the thing about new tunes and collecting tunes. And even in boarding school, that's where I started to write them down.
Your own tunes?
No, not my own tunes, but tunes that weren't in O'Neill's and they weren't in any of the other books that I had. But they were played on 78s, and I'd learned them from my father and wondered why they weren't in the book, and I started writing them down.
Do you still, I know you're interested in collecting other people's tunes, so do you still write down tunes that you hear, things that you might think are unusual or that kind of, you know, a tune
I
that you hear?
I do. I haven't written down so much now, but I have a house full of tapes, and I have some of them labelled and put away, tunes to learn. And, you know, so there's no end to it. I doubt we'll, you know, ever get round to doing all of them. But yes, that's what I enjoy doing. As I say, fishing out a good tune. One odd way that I learned one tune, a very long jig, and I didn't learn it in the house. I went with my father one day to Dundalk, the Pony and Trap, as we used to all the time. But I went with him that day, and there was a tune that he used to play that I didn't have a proper name for. I used to call it Muggity D, because that's the way it seemed that he lilted the first bit of it, and it was the Fries Bitches. And I got him to sing Muggity Dee for me. And between going to Dundalk and coming back, I had it off by the time I came home. That would have been one of the strangest things, you know.
When you were growing up, were there many opportunities to sort of play in public, to get a chance to play your tunes for people?
Not really, no. No, there weren't. Very little music around this part of the country at that time. To get on the bus, there were the Fiddle, there were the Laughingstock, you know. There weren't sessions in pubs and that sort of thing. There might have been the odd house party. I would have been in my teens then, I suppose. We had some at home. It was here in Mullaban that we organised an odd house party, and then we would go to their house and go on from there to somewhere else, and then they formed the Kelly Band and we went out on the road. And
what are your earliest memories of being out on the road, as you say, with the Kelly Band?
Well, I played with a little local band, first of all, called Colin Ure. We just did local Kayleys and that. They would have been on from 9 to 3.
That's a long stint.
And it was all Kayley. It wasn't Kayley in old time. It was all Kayley.
9 o'clock in the evening till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. All the dances when I was young were that as well. So you maybe get a pound for playing. That increased after a while to £1.10. And then going further afield, I remember we went from here to Belmullet, beyond Belmullet to Barnetra, to play the Kelly one night. And we left at 10 o'clock in the morning and got back at 10 the next morning. Yeah. Yeah, so.
And in terms of the audiences, say, for a Kelly like that, would you get a big crowd at Kelly like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Kelly dancing was the big thing. And then there came the time that they introduced the old time into it, and then that was, we nearly went on strike that time. They introduced the playing of waltzes and things like that. It was just wasn't done. So it's half of the people would agree to it, and you know, half of the people in the band would agree to it, and they would play their waltzes and things, and the rest of us would down tools until they had that done. And then when it was reels and shakes, we would take up the instruments again. So that was all good fun.
Did that mellow with time?
It did. It mellowed, yes, it mellowed with time, because I can remember it being in the Vincent Lowe band at one time, did a few gigs with him, and when it came time to do the waltzes, the fellow who was doing double bass at the back had to come forward to play saxophone for the waltzes, and I was told to play double bass. So that was an experience. Oh dear.
You won the gold medal for fiddle playing in the Oireachtas. I think you were about 20.
That's right.
Yeah, and after that, the fiddle kind of a little bit took a backseat, didn't it? Because you
it
were
did.
Doing a lot of accompaniment on the
That's
piano.
Right. That's right. Well, after the Oireachtas, I suppose, I would have done some solo broadcasts myself, live broadcasts. Television was coming in then at that time as well. That was good fun, live television. And then there was the recording of programmes for television, maybe half-hour programmes. They would cover music and song and dance and all that went in between, all recorded the half hour. And then everybody sat and held their breath while it was played through to make sure that there were no mistakes. If there was a flaw in it, it all had to be done again.
The whole thing.
Whole thing. So there were some changes since then, aren't there? Mm-hmm. So I went to doing, I enjoyed doing piano accompaniment as well. I enjoyed getting the harmonies right. And there's an awful lot to Irish music, harmony-wise, that a lot of people don't really understand. I think you can get away with the three-chord trick, as they call it, but there's an awful lot more to it than that. It was in 76 I came back on fiddle, and I went to Shetland to play. Maybe that's what put steam to me, because that's great fiddle country, you know. And then I did my first album.
You did five albums, as far as I know, for Outlet Records,
yes.
Where you played your fiddle and you also played the accompaniment.
Yes.
So tell me how that came about.
It came about because... Communications, it's too long to go into it. It's a story I don't even want to tell now, because I only heard the last bit of it last year. Someone was supposed to play accompaniment with me. They were to come for a rehearsal. They didn't. I never heard from them at all. I had the studio booked, so I had no option but to go and do it. And the only other accompanist that I knew was myself. So I went to the studio and played my fiddle, and then I sat down with the earpans on and played accompaniment, and that's how that happened. It was strange listening to it being played back, because there were even a few of my own tunes on that too, you know, and it was very, very strange listening to myself playing fiddle, playing piano and playing a tune of my own. Great satisfaction in it, really. It's a few years after that then I decided to do two or more while I was at it. And a further couple of years, I did another two. And that's how that came about.
Complete one-woman band.
Something like that. I think it's a different sort of thing to play accompaniment to different people. You know, each one is a different thing. The instrument's different, the person's different, their interpretation of the music is different. And as an accompanist, that's what you have to follow, rather than look for things. You have to listen to what's there and adapt the accompaniment to that, you know. I never thought of myself as a writer at all until this last number of years. The very first tune I composed was the Thrush in the Bush jig, and I don't know why I composed it, but I did. And there was nothing at all for years after that. The other one that I wanted to tell you about was the Ochacashel. I was listening to a broadcast of a band And just at the very end, they finished off with a tune. And as I turned the radio off, the tune was still in my head, but I didn't have it right. So I made a tune out of what was there, and that one was the Ahakasho. And then when I think it would have been about 76 when I was doing my first album that I began to think more about tunes and what went with this and what went with that. And sometimes if there wasn't a tune that I thought would go along with one, maybe something would come into my mind to do, you know. And that's how that happened. I think there were 17 on my first album of my own tunes. Others just happened along the way.
Have you been in situations where you've gone in? I mean, I know people have recorded your tunes and so you've heard them played by other people, but have you been in situations where you'll walk in somewhere and somebody will be playing a tune that you wrote? I mean, has that happened to you and do you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it has. Yes. And they mightn't always know it was one of mine either, you know. So, yeah, it's very satisfying, really. It's a strange feeling.
And is that for you a sign that it's working?
Yes.
Looking back at your tunes, sort of looking even at the titles or at the stories they tell, is it almost like looking back at an autobiography of your life?
It is a bit. It's a bit like that, yes. Yeah. And it's becoming more like a gathering of friends because I've been doing a few for people that I know and people that have done favours for me and grandchildren and, you know, so it's like looking at friends now, you know.
I'm particularly chuffed that it includes the premier recording, I think, of Plexty, Nicholas Carolan, when I appeared in Camlock in All Innocence to launch Josephine's book. I was presented with a beautifully framed notation of a new tune that she'd composed, Plexty, Nicholas Carolan. This was true immortality, I must say, so I'm really, really pleased to find that there.
There was one nerve-wracking experience I had at a Cayley. I went with the Cayley band and didn't realise I had posters up around the wall that I was going to be featured doing solo. Often when these things went on from 9 to 3, there would be a sort of a halfway thing at about 12 o'clock and they'd maybe get somebody up to sing maybe or get somebody to play. And they expected me to play that night. Nothing prepared. I did know the piano player, but we hadn't been playing on a regular basis. So I started to play something in, we'll say, the key of G. I completely lost my nerve. When it came to the second part, I couldn't find it. So I went into something in D. And when I played the first part of that, I thought, I'll keep going now. I couldn't get the second part of it. I got the second part of something else. And I went through five different keys, five different parts of tunes. And I wanted to go down the hole in the floor. And they raised the roof. I thought it was great.
Is it that they didn't notice or that you made a great creation?
I don't know. The piano player was... For God's sake, will you tell me what you're going to play next time? So I didn't know myself. The other thing I might say was when I did the Oireachtas, my double jig, I lost it in the middle of it. And I kept going. So I was... specially commended on my jig. So I got away with that one as well.
And do you play many concerts?
No, not nowadays.
Is there any thought of retiring ever, or has that ever come into your head?
Well, I used to help some children to learn music and that, and I thought I would give that up and retire and have more time, you know, and I've never been busier, you know. Last year I had just completed my collection and I was given an award by the County Council here for my services to music locally. And then I had the launch of my book here, and then I went to France, the south of France, and had a launch there. Went to Chicago. I completed the Giblin tunes with Maura Garvey. I went to Shetland and then I got my Grantham. So that was a full year. I'm still recovering.
And that was all in 2005?
That was all in 2005. And now 2005 I did a CD with John Daly as well. Still has to come out.
And thanks for listening to the Rolling Wave podcast. For more information on the Rolling Wave and past editions in the series, just go to rte.ie/radio1/the Rolling Wave. Till the next time, Gurmina Mahagi, agus slán.